I was just grateful that I had the courage to try.
Yeah.
Because before that, I couldn't try anything. I'd been bullied for so many years. So I always kept to myself.
We want to create a world where women empower each other.
I really wanted to be a mom. Mm. I wanted to be a mom. So that's why I gave it like another try. I am changed.
Yeah.
I am completely changed.
Hello, Wisdom and Wellness family. Welcome to a special podcast. This day, we are celebrating Women's Day in South Africa, and I am joined by three incredible women. You probably love them. They are your faves, I'm sure of that. But before that, I just want to wish all the radiant and beautiful women a happy Women's Day. So I've got the Nivea Radiant and Beauty Squad, starting with Shudufatso Musida, Miss SA 2020, a published author, mental health advocate, and recently a TV host. And the most talkative one here, you wouldn't tell. I literally had to say, girl, stop. Then we've got Anazad Omar, lifestyle, fashion and beauty content creator with a mission to empower and inspire all women through her work and life.
Hi.
I love that. Hey. And lastly, we actually started together.
Yes.
We started together. Vongai Mapo, professional makeup artist, entrepreneur, full-time beauty and lifestyle content creator, and her most important role, a mother.
Yeah.
Crazy story. I think you kind of got into the content space 2017, 2018.
Yeah, yeah.
And same with me. And I was starting my salon and we worked together.
Mm.
And I'm telling you guys now.
Yeah.
And she did my makeup. But the one day I will never ever forget was when I was supposed to open my salon.
Mm.
And we weren't friends like that. Like,
no.
We just was like, we know each other.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to open my salon and then my construction wasn't done. Crazy, the craziest story. And she took my phone. And she texted everyone to say, it's not happening. And till this day, I will never, ever forget how you just came through for me when I was literally like, that day felt like the pits and the pits of hell. So this feels amazing to have you seated on my couch. Guys, let's get straight into the conversation. So going back, starting with you, Vongai, you obviously left a profession in like you were a professional nurse and you started off as a makeup artist and then content creation. But tell me a little bit about that transition from nursing to a beauty space before it became a thing.
Yeah. So I actually wasn't planning on becoming like a content creator.
Yeah.
You know, back then it wasn't known.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a thing. So I hate working. If there's anything that I hate in this world is working for someone else.
Yeah.
So when I was going for my practice and I was going for my training, I just didn't feel like at home, at place.
Mm.
And I was always stressed. I was depressed, actually.
Yeah.
So when I discovered makeup, I started doing makeup on people for fun, in fact.
Mm.
I was doing makeup on my mom. I was doing makeup on my sisters. And I actually realized that I loved it and I was very good at it. And just to tell you guys something, I used to wake up at 4 a.m. to catch the taxi and to go to work. And I would wake up to beat my face at 4 a.m. to be at work at 6 a.m. So my face was always beat. I was always done up. And people would be like, you don't look like a nurse. You don't look like you're supposed to be here.
Yeah.
So I think that was the reinforcement for me. Like people kept telling me, you're so good at this. You could be on a billboard. You know, you could be somewhere doing not this, you know. So I just took it upon me to start doing makeup fully. I just plunged myself in there.
Yeah.
And it worked out.
And Azad, how did you get into your space?
Yeah, so long story short, I was studying marketing. I always knew I wanted to be in the creative space. And then as soon as I was done studying, I got a corporate job, which was the worst experience of my life. But I'm glad I got to experience it because now I know what I don't want to do, which is be in an office. So while I was doing the corporate work and then COVID hit, and I was always online, but not consistent. Ah. So I had my little community, like friends and family, but I didn't keep it up.
Mm.
But when COVID hit, obviously we had more time at home and I started picking it up. I was more consistent. Then I started seeing people started enjoying my content. I started making friends online.
Mm.
And then I think it just started picking up from there. In 2020,
yeah.
I won the Nivea Skinfluencer search.
Yay.
So that also opened a lot of doors, a lot of opportunities on the online space. And the community just kept growing. Now we have TikTok and the community there is incredible.
Yeah.
So by the day, I just
very
keep
supportive.
Growing that community. And
so when did you know it's time to leave your corporate job?
When I woke up and I couldn't get out of my bed. I couldn't physically get up because I wasn't mentally okay and I didn't want to be there. That's when I took the decision, like, I'm sending in that resignation letter. I didn't have a plan B, but I put in that letter and I'm like, I'm going to make something else work, but not this. Then I started freelancing, started growing my online community. I still do work full time, but that's at a digital agency and I still get to work in the space and build those connections. So yeah, at least now it's something that I'm enjoying.
But I think it's important to mention that because especially in the space we're in, people think it's easy to just quit your job and doors are going to open. But for you to mention that, no, I still freelance. There's actually still work happening behind the scenes while I'm pursuing this. I think it's very, very important for people to know, especially in the job climate right now.
Yeah.
But Shuda, I want to hear about your career and how that kicked off and was it part of the plan?
No, it was never part of the plan. I was studying. And I remember I had just graduated with a triple major, philosophy, politics, and economics. And I'm like, yes, I'm going to get a job. This is a nice degree. Almost killed me, but at least now I'm done. And then you find that there are no jobs.
Sure.
And I had to work retail.
What?
I worked, because I had to pay off my fees in order to graduate.
Yeah.
So I worked as a stylist, at an incredible place because my boss was a really nice guy.
Yeah.
So I worked there for 7 months. And even after I paid my fees, I still needed to work in order to basically live.
Yeah.
And then December, 7 months into it, I spoke to my boss. I'm like, listen, I resigned and he asked to speak to me. And I'm like, listen, even if you offer me more money, I'm not happy. I'd rather volunteer than work here because I'm not happy. And then I quit my job with no plan, flew to Cape Town, stayed there for a month, and I had just saved up enough to basically pay my registration for my honors degree.
Mm.
But I didn't know what plan I had beyond that. Then my mom was like, no, she needs X amount for my sister's school. And that was exactly how much I'd saved for my registration for school. So I'm sitting there. I remember I was in Sea Point and I was trying to figure out what's going to happen next. Like, what am I going to do? And then I think it was like 4 days later, I got a call that I got a scholarship. And I did get a scholarship and they decided to basically pay for everything. Mm. And they gave me an allowance that was just like the exact amount I used to get paid at my old job.
Wow.
But even with that, I knew that education is important, but access to opportunities is even more important.
Yeah.
And I think there's not enough focus on that.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I see people in this space, because I just wanted to work in a space where I could help the world and serve the global community. And I was like, let me enter Miss South Africa. Not to win, but just enough to get people to recognize what it is I want to do. And have access to opportunities because of that. Because networks and all of those things are really important if you really want to get somewhere. So I'd never done a pageant before. I could barely walk in heels. I'd never dreamt of being Miss South Africa because I was like, this is not for people that look like me. You know, I don't have hair. I'm curvy. I just want to do it enough just for people to understand what I'm about. So I entered Miss South Africa and I remember when I was doing my entry video, I was wearing my mom's top because I hadn't gone shopping in a while. And I was wearing a duk because my hair at the time, it was during COVID, so my hair at the time was like looking horrible. So I'm like, you know what? Let me just do
just
this
do
thing.
This.
I remember people had like 1 minute, 30 second videos. I only had 30 seconds. And I was like, I don't know what to say. Hi.
What else am I supposed to say?
Hi, I'm Shudu.
Yeah.
Cool, shop by. And then I entered. And I remember when I entered Miss South Africa, when they told me that I'd made it, I was like, let's do this. And then, at every point, what I did was started contacting different people, especially in Limpopo, when I'd made it to the top 35 and top 10, to basically help the community during COVID. So I did the donation of like food packs, like worked with organizations that would give 2,000 monthly meals to different people at home. So I was back and forth between Limpopo and Joburg. I was donating sanitary pads because the thing is, those things should be a basic human right, but they're a privilege for so many people. Blankets, food. I was basically working so hard to just show people that what I'm about is serving my community. Yeah. So even if I don't win, for me, it was never about winning. It was just showing up enough in ways that even if I don't win, I can still call people and say, I don't have much experience, but what I have done is X, Y, Z. Okay, cool. And then I saw that people actually liked me. I was like,
let's use this.
So we did a lot of work in different communities. My foundation adopted a school for children with special needs, and right now they have computers through a partnership that I put together for them. They got another big partnership with Special Olympics. There's so many things that happened in trying to empower others, because I come from those places. So I wanted to make sure that I also give them access while I have access, even if it's for a short time. And then I won Miss South Africa, which was a very weird thing, because when they were announcing the top five, I was the last one to be called. But to be honest, I was just grateful that I had the courage to try. Because before that, I couldn't try anything. I'd been bullied for so many years. So I always kept to myself. You're like, I'm the most talkative one here. But that's how I grew up. I only do it when I'm around people I'm comfortable with. But I'm very introverted. So even doing a competition like that was very hard for me, because it was anxiety every single day, tears every single day, because you just feel like you're not good enough to be there. But you have to do it. You know, you have to do something. So in the calling the top five, I was just with incredible women. And I remember looking up and saying, God, thank you so much for this journey.
Wow.
I promise I will be okay. I don't need to be in the top five. It's okay, because I thought I didn't make it. But I said, thank you anyway. And they announced my name. As soon as they announced my name, I'm like, oh.
Okay.
The crazy thing is, I remember watching, and the minute I saw you, I think all of us do this thing where we identify our person and then we go in between. The minute I saw you, I'm like, that's it. She's Miss SA. And I went and I even tweeted. I'm like, that is Miss SA.
The crazy thing is, I didn't even see it. I didn't even think about it. So when they said my name, it felt like someone did this. Like, you know, like they, like.
Yeah, like. Ding.
And when they said my name, it was just, it was the most beautiful thing, because you realize that when we give ourselves a chance, when we try. We always expect, because in my caption when I entered, I said, I'd rather fail forward. Why was I expecting failure? Because there's always the other side, which is success. And what's happened now is that I never planned for it, but it's basically opened up so many other opportunities, given me a bigger platform to give or try my best to make sure that through my work, other people have access. Not to different opportunities, but access to information to empower themselves.
Sure. You spoke about bullying, and my follow-up question speaks on identity, especially in a space. We're in such a... It's actually sad, the world we're growing up in. I think of my childhood, and we just got to be kids. In primary, in high school, we just got to do whatever, and you didn't have to worry about what other people thought, because it's not online. Now we find ourselves in a space where we're online, we work online, and there's benefits, but there's also the downside. And so I want to ask all of you ladies, have you guys been impacted by bullying, experienced any sort of bullying that made you question your own identity? And how have you stood firm in who you are amongst everything and the world and the space that we're in?
So I think for me, I've experienced that. More especially, I think what happens is when you're a public figure, people almost think they know you.
They know you,
but they don't.
They
think they know you from the way that you obviously present yourself and everything. But I'm so lucky that I know who I am and I was raised that way. Like, I'm very self-aware. I know myself. And anything that people actually say online doesn't really affect me like that, because it doesn't. Because what matters is how I see myself.
Yeah.
So how the world perceives me, that's on them.
Yeah.
So for me,
Nah. Personally, I think we can't run away from it. I mean, I experienced it very young as well at school, where girls turned against me, and we want to create a world where women empower each other, but I got to experience what it was like for girl hate. You know, it's a thing. So from a very small age, I think that actually just developed a thick skin. Mm. And I learned very early that you need to have this thick skin if you want to make it in life. Because wherever you go, people are always going to have something to say. Yeah. Now it's even more because obviously social media and it's from people you don't know.
Yeah.
But when you get it from people you know and that you thought were your friends, that actually makes you so much more stronger. Mm. So I think because of that, today someone, a stranger on the internet, doesn't really faze me. Because
lucky you guys.
Block and bless. So my theory is it's selective, what is it? Yeah. Selective...
hearing, consuming.
Not the hearing, but like you choose who you want in your space.
Yeah.
So yeah, block and bless.
I'm so glad you guys have come to that point. For me, it's hard because my work involves me immersing myself in people.
Yeah.
So if I say I don't care what people say, then I don't get to do this. I have to care what people say. And so now it's the balancing of how much is too much caring. And yesterday, someone made a very nasty, wrote me a very nasty message, and I showed it to my husband, and I was feeling very spicy. And I said, do I respond or do I block? And he said, no, just leave them, because how else will they learn? And I'm like, you know, today is not the day.
Yes.
And I blocked, and maybe some days I'll have grace, but there are days where it just gets a lot. So Shudu, back to you on bullying. How did that affect the person you have become?
I was bullied in primary school and a little bit of high school. So I was bullied for 7 years.
Straight.
And growing up in the village, I was a very extroverted child. Mm. I was like that person who could make friends with anyone, you know. And then I moved to this place and it was just 7 years of trying to fit in and trying to understand why it is, what is so wrong with me that people actually find joy in making me miserable.
Sure.
That really altered my identity a lot, because I moved from being an extrovert to being an introvert. Mm. I moved from being someone who's very open to someone that's very closed, where I have very little friends because I just don't, I'm not that
you
person.
You can't open that.
Yeah, I'm not, like, once you know me, I'm literally like an open book.
Yeah, definitely.
Once you know me, you know this. I'm an open book. I wear my heart on my sleeve.
Yeah.
The reason why I have very few friends is because once you know me, you realize how sensitive I am. And it's only, I show that to people who I know won't take advantage of that.
Be safe.
Because what happened was 7 years of people saying, oh, she's easy. You know, let's just pick on her. Mm. And then that really changed me. I remember I couldn't even look in the mirror for so many years. I hated the mirror. I started overthinking, and I think at 14, I even had suicidal ideations because of how they would treat me. It was horrible. And then I moved schools, but even when I moved schools, I just didn't want to make friends. I just didn't want to connect with anyone.
So you moved schools because of the bullying?
No, I moved schools because my stepfather passed away and my mom got a different job. But that was the best thing that ever happened to me. So when I moved schools, I just didn't even want to make friends, because it felt like when you put yourself out there and people see that, they hurt you, which is why I couldn't try anything for so many years.
Sure.
Because I was just scared of putting myself out there. And if I fail, what if I get bullied again, but on a bigger scale, which happened with Miss South Africa. Because when I won Miss South Africa, even before I won Miss South Africa, online bullying was horrible.
The sexualizing was...
The sexualizing, the tribalism, everything.
Yeah.
And I remember I would... When I won Miss South Africa, I would trend every single week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every single week. Yeah. To the point where I remember I asked my manager, do these people want me to kill myself? Because clearly I can't do anything right.
Sure.
And like you said, in this space, I would usually just ignore it.
Yeah.
But my work involves, you know, people.
Showing up like
that. I'm an ambassador of the country. But it got to a point where I actually had to delete Twitter and not use it. Like I love Twitter because it's funny. Like that's the one place that makes me laugh. But I had to have a different relationship with social media, where like I said, I'm very open, but now I'm very selective about what I show.
Yeah.
And
which platform?
Yeah, which platform. I'm very selective about what I say, where I do have a lot to say. I do have a lot of opinions, but it just feels like not everyone deserves to share them.
Absolutely.
Because, deserves to hear them, because some people don't know how to, you know.
Receive it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even if you go on social media, sometimes I'll be quiet and then someone will just decide to say something nasty. It doesn't affect me that much anymore. Actually, it doesn't affect me at all when someone says anything bad. But there are times where I want to respond because people don't think they know. And I want to be spicy. And then I'll be like,
There's a bigger picture.
There's a bigger picture. Yeah. And
there is a bigger picture.
Yeah. I actually feel like when you feel like responding, you should. You really should.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a form of setting boundaries. Some days you can say, I'm going to be quiet.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's you setting your boundary.
Yeah.
And some days you can say, you know what? I'm going to give it back to you. And trust me, those guys don't want to hear it.
My biggest fear is the screenshots. And then you do something impactful. And then the next thing they're like, screenshot, screenshot.
But not even that. I'm accountable to so many different partners that I work with.
Yeah.
Where sometimes the reason it's not worth it is because people want you to respond so they can use that to make you lose other things.
Yeah.
You need to, I realize that there are people that are just nasty.
Yeah.
For no reason. That
they're
people,
hurting.
They're hurting.
Yeah.
Hurt people.
Yeah.
And I just got to a point where I could respond, right?
Yeah.
But when I respond, it could be me trending for the next week.
That's it. Oh, yeah. And they get to move on.
And they get to move on. So with me, I block.
Yeah.
Block and bless.
I will look at it. I'll be like, Because it's like me putting on hair and people think they can, police.
Yeah, that you're not allowed to do that.
True.
Fun fact about me, I do what I like.
Yes. Tomorrow you've got cornrows, next week you've got curls.
I will literally wake up and you'll find me with a piercing if I want to. Like my mom has given me the freedom to express myself in any way.
Yes.
Since I was a child, even in high school, I would dye my hair all different colors. I've just always been expressive in that way, that when I see someone, and to be honest, it's mostly women.
Yeah.
Yes.
When I see someone saying anything or trying to police how I look or how I dress, I would block you.
Yeah.
I will block you. I've actually had people try to find me on other social media platforms just to apologize. And I will not unblock you.
It's just like, nope.
And then they're like, what did we do wrong? No. Leave me be.
Yeah.
You know, like, leave me be. Allow people to express themselves. Be kind. There's nothing wrong with being kind.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think social media has lost that, but they don't understand the extent to which it affects people. Because we have different experiences as to how we deal with it.
Yeah.
But young kids right now are killing themselves because of social media bullying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Azad, you entered Miss SA 3 times, mm-hmm. more than 3 times before you could actually walk on the stage, right?
Yeah.
I want to know what did that experience teach you? Because it's easy to just say, oh, I got the success, I got the crown, and this is what I learned. But what if you don't get the ideal goal or you keep having to try? So that whole experience of putting yourself out there so many times, what lesson did you get from that?
Sure, there's a lot that you can get from it.
Yeah.
I think the most obvious one is to keep on trying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just teaches you that if it doesn't work out the first time, it doesn't mean that it can't work out the second or the third. And I relate to a lot of what Shudu said, where my purpose of entering is not necessarily just to win.
Mm.
It's a platform that really equips you with so much.
Yeah.
There's so much that you can network with, you can grow with. It's a great platform.
Yeah.
So not winning, it doesn't mean that I've lost.
Yeah.
I've actually gained so much.
Yeah.
And the reason I kept going back is, like, obviously we do want to win. I'm not going to deny that. But it's also taught me the resilience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you ask me today, the platform that has taught me the most about myself, I'd probably say Miss South Africa.
Yeah.
Because it's shown that I'm actually so strong and able to go back and fight for something. And then back to the idea that so many girls, women, young, like, girls come to me and be like, I look up to you so much.
Mm.
And that's why I do it. Because I know that girls want to be Miss South Africa, but there's only one Miss South Africa.
Yeah.
And there's so many of us.
Yeah.
And the idea is sometimes not about winning, but what you can do with the platform and how you can leverage from it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to learn. I've grown. I've become more confident in who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also built so much relationships with brands, my exposure on my social media, people. It's a brand that you're creating,
yeah.
And Miss South Africa helps you lay a great foundation for that.
So. I love how you speak on resilience and also understanding that there's only one Miss South Africa. And I think in relation to just live, we are in a space now where we are made to think everybody has to be in the forefront.
Yeah.
And if you're not in the front, your role doesn't matter. But I was at an engagement where I was speaking about that not all of us are going to have the big platform. Mm. Not all of us are going to win the title. Not all of us are going to do things that everybody's clapping for. But everyone's journey, everyone's position, like, it matters. Because if we're all number one, then who's doing the background work, the important work?
Yeah, yeah. It's the small things. It's like the other day, I went to my primary school. After a long while, and everyone was so excited. Yeah. They knew who I was. And it's the small things. I'm not doing it for the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Like Shudu said, there's so much you can leverage from it. And your community is so proud of you.
Yeah.
And that already fills your cup so much.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, it's the small things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Vunga, I want to talk. I think it's important that you and I talk about motherhood. Mm-hmm. And for you, it didn't start off smooth sailing.
Yeah.
But how has motherhood changed you from loss and then coming back to saying, actually, I want to give it another try?
Yeah, so I think me coming back to try it again is just who I am. Like, I do take no for an answer.
Yeah.
But then I am very strong-willed. So I want things to happen for me.
Yeah.
So I think that's what led me to trying again. I mean, I was hurting.
Mm.
I was hurting so much. And my husband, he wasn't keen, but I really wanted to be a mom. Mm. I wanted to be a mom. So that's why I gave it like another try. And it happened.
Mm.
It happened, and we were excited, and it's led to this moment. I am changed.
Yeah.
I am completely changed. It's actually funny to say that I don't remember the person that I was before I had Aiden.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I try to jog my memory, but I can't recall. I've become more sensitive. I'm more compassionate. I've always been an empath, but now I actually feel like I can stop and feel a lot of emotions. I never used to cry. I wasn't a crier. Now I cry about absolutely anything.
Yeah.
Anything will make me cry. I love it.
Motherhood
has also made me lonely.
Yeah,
but it's
part of it.
Yeah, it's part of it. I think.
And I just want to touch back on loss, because I know so many women experience loss and it really can feel like it's the end, right?
Yes.
How have you, or how are you managing to keep the memory of a child you carried but is no longer here, but also make sure that your son that you do have gets the best of you?
I think what I actually decided after I had my son was I will remember my daughter in my head,
mm-hmm.
and then all those small little things that I've kept in our house, but I try not to impose it, you know, like on my son.
Yeah.
And we also even try not to speak of it, like, you know, too much.
Yeah.
I have a little box of things that I've kept of her, like the stuff that we had bought, his cans and everything like that.
Mm.
And to be honest, I think it's a lingering memory, because every time everybody that I carried with, when I see their kids, I'm always like remembering it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I try by all means not to like out there.
Yeah.
But I have
my
memories in a box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Should you, I think finding out now that I understand why you're such a mental health advocate, listening to how you were bullied and to a point of being suicidal. Right now you are sitting on global stages where that is the conversation. And right now, what is an emphasis when it comes to mental health and women on a global spectrum?
I think it is the gender equality. And I mean, that's because the world is set up in a way that does not support women.
Yeah.
You find that, like what you're talking about now, people they just expect you to be fine. We expect it to be resilient. Yeah. But the truth is women bear the brunt of societal needs on their shoulders. And they're never really given time or the space to examine their own feelings because we always expect it to be mbogotos. You know, like we expect it, pick it up. But the truth is women are suffering in different places where we realize that we are privileged as we sit here because in different parts of the world, in different parts of Africa even, women are being violated on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Some girls aren't even allowed to go to school. Some girls aren't even allowed to leave the house. So the conversation around mental health is, in our context, it's basically the protection of women's rights. But in a patriarchal society where even when we are successful, there's still a level of imposter syndrome that we have, where we question if we belong at the table, if we actually get the chance to be at the table. Young girls right now is in Rwanda and they're speaking, they're already preparing their minds to offer sexual favors in exchange for jobs. That's the reality where you can tell them, oh, school, what.
But
they're like, after this, what's going to happen is, what happens is you go try to get a job, you sit down, someone will sexually harass you, and if you speak up, you're not going to get the job.
Mm-hmm.
We have to feed our families. We don't, and the girls are speaking to are orphans.
Mm-hmm.
So when they go back home, they're being sexually abused. When they go to work, they're being sexually abused. And it's almost like there's no space for them to succeed in the way that they want to. Because the world from birth, they're stripped of their bodily autonomy. They're stripped of their rights. They're stripped of access to opportunities because it's tit for tat when it comes to them. So the conversation is bigger than just, you know, like we feel the things that we feel, but the bodily autonomy of so many young women and girls around the world has been stripped, and they're already preparing themselves to be tormented and harassed and violated in an effort to succeed. So the question becomes, how do we change the narrative for them? And when we speak about mental health, it's not just on a very basic level. It's to empower these young girls to know that they can say no, for them to be so self-aware that they know who they are. Because once you empower someone's mind, you're changing the narrative not only just for them, but for so many other people around them.
Now, it is Women's Day, and it's exciting and all to celebrate Happy Women's Day. But when you mention such things, it's just like, are we still celebrating or are we fixing problems? But I do want to get a little more, a more positive narrative. But how have you think we as, and I'm posing the question to all of you, how has have we as women evolved, not only in our autonomy, in our beauty, but even in our thinking? What's your perception of where we are as women today?
I think we're more empowered. We are aware, actually. We know what's wrong. We know what's
right.
We know what's unfair. We know what's fair. So I think that is really nice. And also I love to see women in leadership positions, something that we haven't seen in like a long, long time. So I love to see women winning. I love to see women leading. I love to see women, just doing it.
Representation,
I think what's also important is that these exact women that are in these positions, like ourselves, are using these platforms to continue spreading
the message,
educating and empowering, because as much as there are already so many of us, there's still a lot that aren't. So this day is so important because it's a reminder of all the work that we still need to do. So that's why it's so lovely to see all these women in all these big spaces continuing to take them up, but also using it to our advantage to continue educating our young girls and telling them that, you know, like you said, using their voice. So,
I think I love the fact that women are not waiting anymore to get seats at the table. We're creating seats for ourselves where we empower other women to come and sit with us. I like the self-awareness too, where we know what we deserve. And we know what we deserve. And I know that obviously there's the good and the bad, but the beauty of it is that we get to speak about it and we get to build, you know, and basically burn the systems and the institutions that disempower us. So I like the fact that we are creating our own seats in different spaces, even using the things that people would tell us make us weak.
Yeah.
You know, that because there's those things where, I mean, like what we're doing right now, we're having a conversation, but this conversation is going to maybe touch many people's lives as well. Like what you guys just spoke about loss and motherhood.
Yeah.
So many things that we spoke about here, but we are using the things that are very feminine but very beautiful in ways to change the world.
Yeah, our vulnerabilities. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually I've been reading a book by Bishop Jakes on disruption, and he speaks on disruption as a good thing. Like in order for movement to happen, there has to be a pain and for someone to decide it stops with me. So when I think of Women's Day, I think of the woman who decided, you know what, actually, we're stopping this, we're going to march. But that's disruption. It's not just like, okay, let's go do this. And so even these conversations, I think it's a form of disruption where in a few years' time, it will be a different thing of, oh, remember, we were just speaking that women are starting to. Mm-hmm. Look at how women are now actually taking over. Yeah. So for me, I think I've got a little bit of hope that there's disruption happening and women are the ones who continue to disrupt everything that's happening. So, still on Women's Day, which woman, and I know you're all going to want to say my mother.
Mom.
So, your mother and which woman has had the greatest impact in your life, in your career, in your thinking, and why?
Viola Davis for me. Yeah, I relate to her so, so much. More especially because she's a dark-skinned woman and she knows the struggles. She knows, So Viola she's my hero.
Have you read her book?
I have.
Did you not weep?
Yes, I cried. I could not stop crying.
I weeped so much. I just couldn't believe it. But you have so much more appreciation for her work now when you know her story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yo, there are a lot of women, but maybe from the top of my head, it would have to be Dr. Phumzile.
Okay.
Lambunguka. The reason I say that is because she hasn't only guided me and like empowered me, but I see her doing it for so many women around the world. She was doing the opening address at Women Deliver in Rwanda, and she said there's a special place in hell for women who don't support other women.
Yes.
And when she said that, she's not just saying that,
she means it
because she does it not just for me but for so many women and so many different communities. And I look up to her because I've seen what she's done to empower other people, where she's not standing alone, gatekeeping, you know, her success or the doors that she has. But instead, she holds your hand and she walks with you through those doors. And if you get stuck along the way, you can just have a conversation with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I love that so much and I respect that. And I respect, I respect her. Yeah.
Good.
I think I want to give a little bit of a different answer because I was going to say my mom.
Yeah.
But I think I want to become that woman that inspires others, especially as an Indian Muslim woman.
Mm.
In my culture, women don't, especially growing up, women don't have a say.
Yeah.
It starts off with our dad at home.
Yeah.
Whatever he says is what goes. Then it's husbands, it's brothers. Mm. Throughout my whole life, men have always told me what to do.
Sure.
And for the first time, I see it in my family. I see it in my community. I am an example of a woman who's breaking those ceilings that these men have created.
Yeah.
And I'm even getting a bit emotional. Yeah. But like, it's this mentality that I always had. And it's something that has taken me so many years to break. And that I want other girls to also start seeing the potential that they have. So I want those girls to look at me as an example that no man can tell you what to do. You are independent and you're strong. So I want to turn into that woman that other women can feel inspired to keep on doing what they want. Because growing up, I was always told from what I wore to where I went to what I wanted to do. Everything was so controlled. And to finally be breaking those barriers is life-changing for me. Yeah. And that's what I want to show to other women as well.
Yeah, it's so important. And I think of all the different women you guys mentioned, how their impact is so generational that it's touched you. And I know for a fact you're touching the next person. And that's why it's so important that we ask these questions, because it shouldn't just end here. In 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, we should be in a better place because the message keeps on spreading, knowing that as a woman, actually, you're allowed to make the decision. Like, we look at I look at my 5-year-old, 4-year-old daughter, and she tells us what she wants to wear. And that old thinking of me wants to say, no, I'm your mother. But it's, what are you teaching already? Yeah, you're teaching that someone has a say. And yes, obviously there's room for being a parent and a mom. But for the most part, we need to raise our daughters for them to have their voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who's yours?
Yeah?
Who's yours?
This is my platform. Mine. I have so many. I think the obvious one would be Mama O. Yeah. She's inspired a whole lot of us. But today I want to mention Sarah Jakes. Mm. I remember picking up her book at the age of 17 or 18, where she wrote her story of how she fell pregnant at 13 years old, right? Mm. And that's what actually made me remember that I was sexually assaulted, because it was something I had almost put at the back of my mind. Mm. And reading her story and how she changed that she uses that story to empower other people and impact other people's lives. And to just see how she's carried that, and she's still so vulnerable and saying, just because I'm on this platform and I've done the work, it doesn't mean I don't go back to that moment. Yeah. It doesn't mean I don't get insecure. It doesn't mean that I just walk into rooms and I feel like I belong. Yes, I do. And yes, I'm more self-aware. I'm confident and I'm doing great things, but there's still that. And for me, it speaks to vulnerability, which is such a big thing for me. So yeah, Sarah Jakes for me has reminded me that it doesn't matter what has happened in your life. You shouldn't necessarily throw the story away, but you use it to encourage others, because how many others have gone through the same, who just need someone who looks like them to say, hey, look, it's hard, it's gonna be hard, but we're doing this and you're allowed to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Sarah Jakes. All right, so guys, beauty standards have evolved. We went from television. It's actually crazy when I think about adverts 10, 15 years ago and where they are now. And they've evolved, and it's now it's normal to see someone with short hair on a cover.
Yeah.
Whereas it was not, it was never a thing, right? And we have come a long way. But how do you guys feel about your shade of beautiful?
This shade?
Yes.
Ooh, I love it. Growing up, I didn't like my skin color, to be honest, because we grew up, like you're saying, on TV, where only light-skinned women were considered beautiful and everyone else is just like, ooh.
Sit there.
Just sit
there. In the corner.
So I didn't feel beautiful, but now that I'm older, like, I love it. I can't wait to give birth to brown babies with my skin tone. I genuinely really love it, because I wake up just being grateful for it. And I love that I'm just like the perfect combination between my mom and my dad.
Yeah.
And I love being black.
Love it.
For me, I love my skin. Hey, I don't have any problems with my skin. I just realized when I moved to South Africa, people had a problem with dark skin.
I'm sure it was like, how? Yeah, what?
It was like culture shock. What do you mean? So, going back to what I was talking about, I always had this reinforcement from home. Mm. Like, you're beautiful. I'm quite darker than everybody else in my family, by the way. My sisters are light-skinned. Mm. So I was always the most beautiful one.
Oh, the special one.
Yeah. So I thought, like, I was gorgeous. I thought my skin was freaking amazing.
Sure.
And then I moved to SA, and there was that seclusion. Light-skinned girls were better, obviously. They were prettier. Mm. I was not the pretty one. I was the awkward one. The doc, the nerd, and I just kept to myself because I realized I don't fit in. But it never really affected me like that, because I've always known that I'm beautiful from home.
Sure.
So I just thought maybe I was different. They didn't like me because I was different. Wow. So I carried that
perspective.
And yeah.
Sure. Yeah. It's crazy that you mentioned that, because at home we are always so loved and so beautiful.
Yeah.
But then when I go back to school again, yo, there were such bullies there. But anyway, at school, that's when I started being more conscious about like my skin and how it looked, because I'd never thought of it before.
Yeah.
And I remember at school, they used to call me turmeric because my religion, I don't know, they just call me turmeric.
Sure.
So it got to a point where I remember I went to my maths teacher. She was also an Indian lady. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ma'am, they're calling me turmeric. Like, yeah, this
what
is
does it mean?
Crazy. And me expecting her to be like, okay, let's go get the principal. Let's go find these children. She's like, and what are they calling the other kids? And I'm like, nothing. And then again, I expected to say like, okay, then that's bullying. Let's go find them. And then she just looked at me and she was like, do you realize how unique and special you are that people have to come up with names to try to bring you down? And that has stuck with me till this day. And I always go back to that. And it just shows that when you're unique and when you're beautiful, people will want to try and bring you down.
Yeah.
They'll give you names. They'll bully you. But then you just have to remember the beauty of it all. You're beautiful. Sure. You're unique.
Come to think of it.
Yeah.
I think I was actually bullied, but I think I don't realize.
I don't realize that I was bullied. It. And that's why I wanted to say, like, as someone who's raising a daughter right now, you're emphasizing how important it is to tell her exactly who she is at home and emphasize, because it, like, the way you're telling, you're oblivious. You're just like, I was fine.
She's like, I was perfect.
She's like, they're the problem. You guys sit over there because I'm special.
Because she's like, okay,
maybe there's something wrong with
me. Yeah, it's about me. I don't know. It's about you.
Yeah, and honestly, I think if a lot of us have that, it's amazing, because people are always gonna talk. There's always gonna be this group and that, but if there's that self-awareness, it's like, okay, sit over there, I'll sit here with my special. So you guys are amazing. I love you guys. Such a good conversation. But I have to go, I have to close off, and I'm gonna go to something I call my wall of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, I want to start a little differently. So I love the Radiant and Beauty Advanced Care Body Lotion, right? And cream, especially winter, because it's obviously very, very moisturizing. So I want to throw it at you guys. Pick your fave between the Care range or the Even Tone range, and why?
Mine is definitely the Advanced Care.
Okay.
The brown bottle.
The brown bottle. Yeah. That's my favorite.
With the avocado oil, almond oil, all the oils and vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
It just, and also it smells really good. Yes. I love the scent. Mm. And like you said, for winter, my skin gets very dry.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the little tub.
Yeah,
that's definitely my favorite.
I'm a tough girl. Also a tough girl.
I think I love them both for different, for different specialities. The Radiant Advanced Care is a little bit thicker.
Yeah.
It's on the thicker side.
Yeah.
And I think it's great for winter, not summer. Yeah, it's really great for winter because you don't really need to add anything to it for you to get moisturized.
Yeah.
And then the Radiant Beauty?
Yes, or the Even Tone range.
Yes. Love that because of the consistency.
Mm-hmm.
It's very light. So when in summer, it just seeps into your skin. Doesn't feel like you're wearing anything. I hate to feel like there is something sitting on top of my skin.
Yeah.
So that just seeps into your skin. Yeah. So for different occasions.
Yeah.
Different.
I really love the Advanced Care, the brown bottle, because it looks really nice.
That's aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah. No, it's like, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But I like it because I hate having dry skin. I find it so like embarrassing.
Yeah. Ashy. It is so embarrassing.
I find it so embarrassing that even in summer, I still prefer this one.
Yeah.
Because it's like, growing up, I used to use the, you know, the dark blue.
Yeah.
So that was like my fave. That's the
Still loyal until I got this for my goodie bags. I'm like, okay, I'll switch.
I was so loyal. Like, it's the craziest thing about working with Nivea is that I've used it my entire life. So that's like, oh, okay, I work with them now too. But I really like this one because I just have a thing where every time on my ankles or I'm so embarrassed.
I know.
Like, I just want to rush to a corner, fix it, and pretend like nothing happened.
Yeah.
So it just gives me that mental
you're good notes.
Yeah, you're sorted. Yeah. When you talk about embarrassing, like, the, actually, you know, it's like one of those things where what's embarrassing, but that's not supposed to be embarrassing. Yes. Everybody gets ashy, but it's like so embarrassing. Like, you feel like you don't take care of yourself.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, and like, I don't know, do you guys get cracked heels?
Yes. Yeah.
I find it so embarrassing. Yeah. I even find it embarrassing with my husband in winter when I scratch his legs. It's just like, oh, why don't you take care of your feet?
Do you know what my partner said?
What?
When my ankles get ashy, he's like, you're exfoliating me.
But it literally is that. It's exfoliation. It's just like,
No, he's very spicy.
Do you guys use, I don't know if you guys have ever used EJ, like a stone to scrub?
But that makes it worse.
Really?
Does it?
No,
I swear, because I'm putting my mom on blast here, but my mom used to use that thing and it never got better. I feel, and also before I went to Miss World, right?
Yeah.
There's this thing that they say you must use a foot mask and then all of it comes off.
Yeah.
Actually, my heels got worse after I used that thing. Like,
is
that,
it?
I swear, like, and
what kind
like,
of
and
heels I'm not, do and you I'm, have?
And my, like, I was fine before that. I never struggled with, like, you know. But then after that, and I'm not the only one, my friend's had the same thing. She used the same thing. And her foot actually got drier after that. I don't know what it is, but I actually found this, like, nice. Obviously, you need to really moisturize it.
Yeah.
But even when you do that, sometimes it's not.
It just like,
doesn't go away. But I found this nice treatment at this place where they just put, I think they call it a Medi Peel.
Mm.
And I swear, for the first time in, when did I go to Missoula? 2020. For the first time in 2 years.
Yeah.
My heels are much better.
So we shouldn't use a, do you use a stone?
I do.
Like which one? Like an aesthetic
those,
one or the,
called?
Those.
It, not the rough one. Oh, okay. Those ones you can find from Cliques.
The black one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're not buying the one from the original the streets and exfoliating with an orange sack. Like we passed that. Okay, guys, let's get to my wall of wisdom. You're each going to answer it. We'll start with you, Shudu. Mention a book or podcast that you highly recommend.
A book that I highly What Happened to You by Oprah Winfrey and I think it's Dr. Perry.
Yes, Dr. Bruce Perry, yeah.
Yes, because that changed my life because of the trauma that I've had in my past where my question was always, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? And I've now changed it to what happened to me.
Sure.
And when I asked myself what happened to me, I realized that it wasn't my fault.
It wasn't your fault.
Yeah. So that book really honestly changed my life, and I love the physical book, by the way, but the audio actually makes the biggest difference because it's a conversation between them. And then a podcast that changed my life. I really like Bishop T.D. Jakes stuff.
Yeah.
Because especially when I was at Miss World, there'd be times where I felt like I'm weird, awkward. And I remember not just the podcast, but like actually the sermons at church. And he said, why would you want to fit in?
Sure.
Mm. When you fit in, there's nothing special about you.
Mm. Yep, sounds like one guy.
Literally. And when I listened to that, I remember I was in the bus and I was so emotional on that day. But when I listened to it, he's like, please stop trying to fit in because you're not meant to fit in. There's a reason why you're different. There's a reason why God made you special.
Yeah.
And if you want to fit in, why would
you just...
Yeah.
For me... A book that I really recommend is Rising Strong by Brené Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. Even her TED Talks. Yeah. But specifically Rising Strong, it really helped me during my Miss SA journeys.
Mm-hmm.
It just talks about falling down but getting up and having the courage
to get up.
Because if you don't have the courage, you'll never know what's on the other side.
Sure.
And it touched... Oh, why am I stuttering? It touches on so many things.
Yeah.
Especially also the bullying and the judging. And when people are, she defines it as being in a boxing ring.
Mm-hmm.
And people on the outside are so quick to scream and like tell you what to do. Rather tell them to come fight then.
Yeah.
So stop letting the people outside of the boxing ring telling you how to fight and call them to fight with you. So yeah, I definitely recommend that book, especially for people who are going through failure.
Okay. Mm.
It makes you look at failure from a different perspective rather than just seeing it as the end of the road, but only the beginning, how you can grow from it, how you can learn from it, and really just see how you can take that opportunity and make it and turn it into more. Mm-hmm. So Rising Strong by Brené Brown.
Podcast? Don't have one?
Brené Brown.
Brené Brown.
I love Brené Brown.
I just have to say something to you. So you entered in my year, right?
Yes.
And I remember there were the closed interviews. I think it was the top 35 interviews or something. Mm-hmm. And Varna, actually, out of everyone, he said you are his favorite.
Wow.
Because you said, I think, what do you like watching?
Brené.
You liked watching some weird stuff.
Korean dramas?
At the time, I think it was Korean dramas, and now so into them, so it's not weird. But he remembered the fact that you are just yourself.
Mm. Sure.
He said he liked how you were just yourself. He's sure. Like, she's different in the sense that she's not afraid to be herself.
Wow. Yeah.
And that stood out for him, I remember. Like, aww, it stood out. But I actually just want to start watching something different too, like anime, so I could be
It's the Korean drama.
Yeah. So I just and in terms of the failure thing and how I don't think you failed in any way.
Yeah.
I think actually you have been more successful than what you realize, because whoever meets you, you leave a lasting impact in everyone's life.
Yes,
because
ma'am,
you're so kind and you're such a light in every room that you walk into. But I never forgot that he said that. Literally, I think it was when we went to the offices for the pictures or the makeovers, the top 35
pictures.
Yeah,
yeah, well, yeah.
After you left, all he could speak about was Anazar. I'm like, who's this Anazar? So I just wanted you to know that.
Oh, sure. Well,
I find her to have like a childlike innocence.
Yes, a childlike innocence. Yeah,
like,
very light.
Oh, guys.
My podcast is Your Higher Self.
Okay.
It's Your Higher Self by, it's Helen Rose or something like mm-hmm. that. But she speaks a lot about being yourself, mm-hmm. you know. She speaks a lot about self-awareness,
yes,
actually.
Okay.
And also she speaks a lot about being online and, like, just seeing how people can see you differently mm-hmm. online and preparing yourself, like a public appearance mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I really like listening to her from that perspective. And also she is... she likes yoga, which is something that I'm tapping into.
Yeah.
And I just find her calm.
Good for you.
And peaceful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Book?
Book, A Thousand Splendid Suns.
By who?
It's A Thousand Splendid Suns.
Who is it
by
from?
By Paul Coelho.
Yes. Paul Coelho.
I really love it. It's about resilience anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is something that I relate to, because I really don't come from a very privileged background. Mm. And I've had to build myself way up. So
have you guys all read The Alchemist?
Yeah,
I've heard.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and The Alchemist. Yeah.
It's funny, when I first picked it up, I was just like, what is going on here? Mm. And then like 2-3 years later, I was like, this is the best book I've ever written. So I think books are very spiritual and seasonal. Yeah. Okay, a quote you live by? Quote you live by, Bible verse you live by, a word?
The Bible verse, like, even when I'm down, my aunt always reminds me. She's like, don't forget your favorite Bible verses, Jeremiah 29 verse 11. Because there are times where things don't work out the way that you want them to. So
yeah.
I always remember, I know the plans that I have for you, plans to give you a future. I've experienced a lot of loss over the last few years.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing is, on two occasions where it, like, was ringing in my head, my grandfather, who is the absolute love of my life, when he passed away, that felt like the end of my life. But I remember I was outside and I just kept on thinking about it. And, like, you know when you're crying your eyes out?
Yeah.
Like, crying your eyes out. I was listening to Waymaker, but also thinking about it, where I prayed and I said, thank you, God. You know when you're praising God in your toughest time?
Yeah.
That was when I was like, okay, cool. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And it still hurts, but you get to see, you see God show up in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be in the way that you expected, but he shows up in different ways.
Sure. Question of five?
On what Shuda is saying in Arabic, we call that maktub.
Maktub.
And it basically means just trusting the process.
Trust the process
and whatever is meant to be will be, no matter how it unfolds.
Sure.
And a quote that I also love to live by is, fall 100 times, but get up 101 times.
Yes, ma'am.
It's no secret that I've fallen many times, but I'll always choose to get up, because falling down means learning so much.
Mm.
And getting up means getting up stronger.
Sure.
So if you fall, you just get yourself up and dust it off and keep on going.
I live by,
what she just said, actually. Trust the process and Godspeed. Because for me, I take everything that happens in my life as an opportunity to become better. If it's bad.
Yeah.
If it's good, it's good. Yeah. We're moving on. Yeah. And I really love everything, every little experience that I've experienced in my life. I appreciate it. Wow. And I take it as is. Loss, happiness, joy, sadness, anger, everything. Yeah. I embrace it. And I take it to the next step. So trust the process. Mm. Trust every little process. And I always say, in anything that I do, hashtag grateful for the mishaps, grateful for for the opportunities, grateful for literally every single thing. Sure. So
I love that you guys say that. We were having a conversation the other night, and for me, it's on perception. I realized that the most powerful thing I've ever done in my life was let go. Detach.
Mm. Yes.
I think we attach so much. Yeah. We're so attached to the outcome.
Yeah.
We're so attached to it has to happen like this. And when I was so attached to how it had to happen, the way it was supposed to happen, I was so miserable. But once you detach, yes, we still have the goal. Yes, you still have the vision. But you fall in love with the process that when the thing comes, it's just like, this too?
That's why.
Amazing.
Have you read Tuesdays with Maury?
Yes, I have. Oh my gosh, one of my favorite books. I think, I don't know if there's a reprint. I saw something about, I think it's a different type of one about Maury as well that just came out.
But it's crazy how I didn't understand when he spoke about detachment.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's one of the most beautiful books I've ever read.
Yeah.
But like you're saying, when you detach from how things are supposed to happen. And I have to remind myself that because where I am now, I didn't plan for it this way. But when you don't plan and you just, present.
It's the most beautiful thing, especially for creative people, because I think we can get so stuck in this, it has to be this way, and then you just become so miserable. But when you detach, man, life is beautiful. My last question, what did you want to say?
Nothing.
Okay, okay, you guys are gonna fill in you guys must fill in the sentence. I'll start with you, Vongai. A wise woman once said,
I don't know what to say. That
Should I give you a moment?
Give time.
How, guys? A wise.
I think I'm gonna say a wise woman once said, "Be kind.
Be kind. Yeah. That's it.
Just be kind.
Yeah.
With everything and anything you do.
Yeah. Who's
just
the wise woman?
My mom.
Your mom. There we go.
On that, actually, the be kind. Yes. But respect everyone.
Respect everyone.
And that wise woman was my grandmother, where you respect everyone. Mm. The same way you'd respect the president, you respect everyone in the same way. Because once you learn to respect humanity, you get to respect yourself too.
Wow. 100%.
Yeah, stop and listen. My mom always used to say that. Yeah. Like, you need to take time. You will... Like, a lot of things will pass you if you don't stop and listen.
Sure.
My mom used to say that to us a lot. Just stop
and listen.
Just stop and be attentive. Hmm. And then you get to see a lot.
Sure. Yeah. It's beautiful. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
You guys have been... You are not... You, I feel like you're ready to say, what did your wise woman say? Yes. excuse us, are you going to answer the question? For me, a wise woman once said, I'm the wise woman.
Yeah.
There's grace for today.
Aww.
And everything, no matter how hard the day is, there's grace for it.
Yes.
No matter how amazing the day is, there's grace for it. No matter how nervous you are, you've been, the fact that you are there. God has given you the grace for that.
Yeah. I love that.
I just noticed both of you have like a tattoo in the same spot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mine, I wish I did a different font. Just like, why was I in my cursive era? Couldn't I just choose a simple font?
What's yours?
I don't have a tattoo.
You don't have tattoos? I don't think you're allowed to. Are you allowed,
I'm allowed to do anything.
Oh, you're allowed to do anything.
I think my issue is always like the pain.
Oh,
like when I think about tattoos, I think about pain. But I know that when I have children, I wanna
tattoo their name. Yeah. I thought I was gonna do that, but I still haven't. So I don't know. What is that, Mungai?
It's fire. It's a flame.
Okay. Yeah. When did you get it?
My son. This is my son. I got it. When did I get it? A few months ago.
Oh, yeah. Your first. No. First tattoo? No. You're just... All right, guys, it's in the conversation. Thank you so much. And once again, happy Women's Day. Thank you to Nivea for making sure that we have this beautiful conversation with amazing women who bring so much to the world that we are in. And today, don't forget, you are radiant and you are beautiful. I'm Pumila Daba. Thank you for listening to Wisdom and Wellness.